What do I call myself? That's what Allison Eden wondered when she became fascinated with a medium that would allow her to create a signature body of work. Glass.
It's not just a piece of artwork. You can see the stress points as you go and how you were feeling that day. There's a lot of emotion in every single piece that nobody realizes. When you look at something that's water jet, there's no life to it. It is what it is. But when you look at handmade mosaics or handmade anything, that the movement of your emotions that day, and there's so much going on.
Now based in Brooklyn, you can find Eden's work all over the world, in homes, hotels, hospitals, restaurants, community centers, and even in the form of a giant mosaic shoe at Bloomingdale's.
Hi, I'm Allison Eden, and this is a lesson on loving what you do.
What's your earliest memory of being creative?
I used to draw like everywhere. I would draw on my desks at school. I would draw on my shoes. I was drawing everywhere. My mother gave me this book, and recently that she had given me when I was 6 years old. And it said, what do you want to be when you grow up? Do you remember that book where you would put like, where do you want to live? What do you want to do? And I filled everything out. Like, how tall are you? What is your favorite food? Mm-hmm. All this stuff at 6 years old. And it said I wanted to be an artist living in New York City and have my own gallery. And that was at 6 years old.
I knew.
And I have that book. It was weirdest thing. And it's like everything that I had ever, that I had wanted as a little girl.
Yeah.
Who even knew I liked New York City at six?
What city did you grow up in?
In California. Uh-huh. I grew up in San Diego. Uh-huh. In a really like sweet little town called La Jolla, but we were always in New York all the time. And as a little kid, I think even as a baby, I just used to love the lights and the smells. And I remember like the chestnuts at Christmas. I just all like the energy. I just love that energy that New York offered, even as a baby, I think.
I love that. And you were drawing then, but you work in many mediums now. Predominantly glass, and your work is phenomenal. So tell me a little bit about how you transitioned into that medium, what drew you to it, and then how you started to expand and grow the kinds of things that you do there.
So I was going to FIT, Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City, for fashion design. And I always wanted to be a fashion designer also. I can create my own patterns and I can sew. And this was making your own outfit. There is nothing better than that. It is so much fun. And I loved it. And one day I was downtown and I was having breakfast in Tribeca and I walked by a store that sold glass, the most colorful glass I've ever seen. Mm. I just walked in and I'm like, what do you guys do here? You know, they said we sell glass for windows. And I actually bought some and I was living in the dorm and I brought it back to my dorm. And I was like, these are the coolest glass I've ever seen. I can't believe they just make windows and lamps from this. First, I was trying to glue it to clothing. And I was like, yeah, this is heavy. And I'm like, this isn't the medium for it. And so I just started gluing it to cardboard to see what I could do. And oh my God, I've never seen this before. This could be on walls. I could use this as my canvas, as my drawings, but I only knew how to break it. I didn't know about like little hand tools or laser jets or wet saws. I didn't know any of that. So I would just break it with a hammer and glue them to boards. And I was working at Nautica. I was the copy girl and as my internship. And so I loved that job. I don't know why, but it was the greatest job. I would sit there and I was really conscientious. I actually bought all my own like paper clips and staples. And I came all prepared to be the copy girl. And the people would come by and I would line up my little samples that I made all on the back wall. So they'd be like, hey, we need 100 copies of this quickly. And I was like, well, while you wait, would you like to look at my mosaics? Maybe you're looking to renovate your house. Maybe looking to redecorate. And they would be like, what are you talking about? And then during my lunch break, I would walk around the Garment Center and I'd go from showroom to showroom. Mm-hmm. And I would just walk in. I would say, I have this idea. Your showroom is could use some renovating. And maybe I can assist you with it, with making tables or making mosaics in any form, picture frames, flower pots, whatever it was, whatever I could glue to, I was trying to glue to. And I didn't have, it was before phones, so I had no pictures. And I had a Kodak Polaroids, and I would show them my Polaroids, which I probably still have on my desk. I mean, that's like, I so love sad. That. And that's how I started, from walking around the Garment Center. One day, I walked into a showroom. I got a little job, and then another little job, and
it took
started
off.
Right from there.
It took and off.
It took off. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no training. I didn't know what I was. And I had no clue. And I'd been in college for quite some time. I wasn't on the 4-year plan. I was more on the 8-year plan. And then to call my mother and to say, Mom, I think I'm going to be a mosaic artist after them paying for college for 6 years, 7 years. It was, you could only imagine how they were not. So,
not happy with that.
They were always super, super supportive, but they weren't, oh, we're so proud. They were like, what? What are you doing? What?
So no other creatives in your family then?
Oh, you know what? My mother is an interior designer. My father was so creative. He was just like the life of the party, fun, wild. I had great supportive parents.
So you think they would be prepared that if your mom's an interior designer, that you're going to come out with something that is visual.
Yes, that's why they were so supportive. And I do believe now, being a mother, that when you support your children, no matter what they're doing, they'll come out so much better for it. I never did well in school. I was a C student. And my parents used to tell me, you are the smartest girl I know. You are the prettiest girl I know. And in my mind, I was the smartest girl. I was the prettiest girl because my parents told me. They gave me such great support that way. So when, you know, I decided, I don't know if I'm going to be designing clothing. I'm going to be making mosaics now. They were, I think they stood back and they were like, oh God. But okay, we'll support you. Mm-hmm. And they did.
So then you're winging it here. I remember there was one story you told about the phone book and somebody found you in the phone book, which I love that story.
Great. Okay, the phone books. I was like, you know what? I'm going to put ads out in the yellow pages and I am going to be something. And I wasn't sure what it was. So I wasn't sure what an architect was. I didn't know what a contractor was. I didn't know any of these things, but I just went through the A, B, C, and I put out these beautiful ads. And I put that I was a contractor. I don't know. It looked good. There were a few in the yellow pages. So I figured, oh, I'll put a little ad in. So I get this call from Burger King and they're like, we're looking for somebody to install the Brazilian wave pattern on a floor in Burger King on 47th Street in New York City. And we can't find anybody in the tri-state area that can do it in the time frame. And I was like, well, you've come to the right place. We do this all the time. I had no idea. So I rented a car and I drove to Home Depot in New Jersey and I bought a video on how to tile a floor. And I showed up to give an estimate with a new invoice book from Staples. I was like, oh, one. You would have thought that made a red flag, especially when I was handwriting my invoice as like a 20-year-old. None of these red flags were raised with them. And so I got the job and I knew what I needed. I got it. I was hiring people on the street. I was working like crazy hours and it was middle of winter and it was snowing inside of the place. All they had was wood. There were no windows. So I was working in mud and I would hire basically like homeless guys. Like, hey, I need to pay you to move this and I'll pay you to do this. And I became a GC on my own project with people who had no idea what they were doing. And I had just started dating my husband at the time. And to tell him, from a fashion design student to a tile layer, he had no idea what was going on. He was working on Wall Street, and he would come to visit me, and he wouldn't leave. He would sit on a bucket in a suit from work and watch me. I remember telling him, I'm like, I am so sorry if I might not be the girl for you. I really enjoyed it. And he was so amused and so loved it. I think that's why he married me, because he just thought this was just so crazy.
And he's inside. And he works inside your business now.
Oh my God. He left Wall Street.
I feel like whenever I think of glasswork, and mosaic artist is different for me, but glass, I think of Dale Chihuly. I feel it like it's like such a male-dominated industry. Is that fair to say? And how did you navigate through that?
There are a lot of glass mosaicists that are women. I think probably many years ago, this was a nice hobby for women that were stay-at-home moms. I turned it into a real like business.
Mm-hmm.
Being in a construction world, I thought it was really funny to be really the only girl. And I did realize that the most important thing, if I was going to succeed, was to be knowledgeable, to know more than they knew. And the only way I realized that was not through successes, but through failures. I feel like you don't learn things when you're being successful all the time. You need to make mistakes, and you need to learn from those mistakes. And that's the way I taught myself. I'm still making mistakes, and I'm still teaching myself, but I feel like I've learned so much. So when I do go to job sites, sometimes I walk in and they'll be like, oh, who's this cream puff that thinks she knows what she's talking about? You know what I do?
I mean, the complexity of the work that you're doing, the complexity is incredible. And so how many people are on your team? How many people does it take to do that kind of install? How do you find people who are artisans and working at the same level as you are when you're doing that kind of highly skilled work?
So I teach everybody, and I am on every project, and I have a team of about 15 people. And this isn't something that you come in and you just leave. You have to love what you do. We're basically one big family. I go from project to project all day long. I'm in the studio 18 hours a day. I work on as many projects as I can every day, and teaching different techniques and learning different techniques. Also, I'm still learning every day and finding new materials. And you have to love what you do, because if you don't love what you do, it's not worth doing. So I try to teach people to love exactly the way I love it.
Are you doing more creative, or are you doing more sales inside your business? Or both?
Both. Yeah, I do. I have to do the creative sales. I don't do this. Gary does more of the sales, but we sell through showrooms. Right. So the showrooms do all the sales, or the designers. So I don't really have to do any sales. I actually love closing my deals. This is what we're going to do. These are your drawings. These are your colors. And what I do not like to do is talk money. I hate talking about money, because if you ask me, how much is this worth? It's priceless.
Right.
But in the real world, you have to have a
value.
You have to have a price.
Right.
Not everything can be, right. To me, everything is billions. Right. Yes, it is. And we put so much hard work and love and energy. It's not just a piece of artwork. You can see the stress points as you go and how you were feeling that day. There's a lot of emotion in every single piece that nobody realizes. When you look at something that's water jet, there's no life to it. It is what it is. But when you look at handmade mosaics or handmade anything, that the movement of your emotions that day, and there's so much going on. I know every piece that we lay down. Every piece has a story.
So if you think about, and I feel like I know what you're going to answer for this, but intuition inside of a business, right? And running a business, because again, you're so humble, but your business is big. You're running a very big business. It's artistry at scale, really. So is there a time when you're making a decision that if the numbers told you, hey, you shouldn't do that, but the intuition told you, oh, hey, we're going to do this. And you went in favor of your intuition. Can you tell me about one of those times?
Oh God, that's all I do. If mm-hmm. I love it, I do it. For instance, I created this pattern with lips everywhere. And everybody told me, Allison, you're so crazy. Don't, it's, no one's ever going to buy it. And I would sit there and I'd hand cut lips for hours and days and months and making samples for people. It became so popular. My intuition said, yes, this is going to be wonderful. On the books, at first, I got nothing. And I got nothing for so long. So it finally took hold and people were like, wow, this is fabulous. It's so different. I love it. So actually, everything I do is intuition. I don't think monetary rewards. I feel like what I want to do. And that's the whole way I've ever structured our whole business. Mm-hmm. If my husband was here, he might chime in and tell me, say differently. But I think that you need to follow your heart. And if your heart tells you something is going to be a hit, hopefully it will.
I think there's something about timing too, that because you mentioned it wasn't a hit at first, but then it took hold. And I think there is something about creativity that is prescient or forward thinking. Do you feel like your creativity comes through you or is of you?
I think just of me.
Okay. So ideas don't land. You don't get the download, as it were.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they just come to me. I'll just be doodling and then it'll be like, oh, that's it. And I feel like I've gotten a lot of inspiration by just getting out there, walking around, seeing what's around me, seeing the styles and seeing people. And I look around at the subway and I see everybody's on their phones. They're all looking down. Mm-hmm. There is so much to see and so much you can get from just looking around, seeing the way people are dressed and the way they look. And you will get such inspiration because mm-hmm. that's what people need. You need to be inspired. And right. you're not going to be inspired by sitting on Instagram and right. looking at somebody else's fabulous life. That will actually, I think, pull you down in some ways mm-hmm. because half the time I don't believe they're even true. I think really taking notice of your surroundings, smell the flowers, notice them, and take part in them.
Do you think that women lead differently?
I feel like women are more nurturing. I feel like we have babies, we're mothers, and we nurture and understand the need to be with your children. And I feel like we could nurture, whereas sometimes men are more about the bottom line.
Let's look at it even in the context of your company, because you're a partnership. So are you leading more from a feminine lens? Would feminine be a word that you would embrace or no in terms of leadership?
Oh gosh, you know what? I don't think of it in that way. I feel like men and women are in my world, it's equal. I've never been one to not do a man's job. And I know my husband has not had any problem doing something that I would do. So I'm lucky enough not to have felt that there were,
that gender. Yeah, by gender. Yeah, sex,
not at all. We just do what we need to do to pay the rent. How about that?
There is interesting research that creatives in general, that they tend to be more ambiguous in terms of their gender identity. Women, when they're creative, they take on that masculine energy a little bit more. And whereas male creatives will take on the feminine energy a little bit more, which I think is interesting, that we don't tend to perform as much to the gender roles, which are so changing.
Right. I agree. But as a woman, like, I want to look beautiful. I want to be treated beautiful. I want my husband to open the door. I want to be treated like a woman. I don't mind getting in there and doing a dirty job that most women wouldn't do. I'm proud of everything that we've built over the years because it was not easy. I sell something that nobody needs, and we sell. We have been able to really cultivate a beautiful collection of people that are like-minded like us. Most of my clients are like repeat clients. They keep coming back always, and they become like family. And we do everything in New York City. We make urban art. It's wonderful. This is You've got to come visit, because the studio is, there's so few studios like this left. And 30 years ago, this is what New York City was. There were studios on every single block in the city. And little by little, we were all pushed out. And I moved to Brooklyn, and it's the energy is there. It's coming back.
If you were to complete the sentence, my wish for every other woman is...
follow your dreams. My wish is that they do follow their dreams. Because when you do, the most beautiful things happen.
Be visible. Use your voice. Every other woman needs you to lead. Voice Lessons is co-produced, written, and spoken by me, Kim Cutable. It's also co-produced and edited by Sergio Miranda. You can find past episodes, show notes, and the cool stuff our guests recommend at voicelessonspodcast.com.